Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
What's up? You're welcome to Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. The place to drop all of your texts, all of your voicemails. You want to react to the Bulls West Coast road trip, mini road trip to that. Hit us up at 331-979-1369 or drop us a tweet at Locked On Bulls. Matt, hope you had a fantastic Thanksgiving break, and hopefully you didn't spend too much agony and fight over this Bulls West Coast road trip, because it has been an absolute disappointment. But how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, you said it was a quick road trip. I tell you what, it didn't feel like it when I was sitting there watching the Bulls just play terrible basketball at, you know, 10:30 at night. At least they got a win out of it. And I don't know if you saw that stat, but it was crazy when I realized it. It was the Bulls' first win last night in Sacramento on the West Coast. Their first Pacific time zone win since February of 17.
That is pathetic.
So those West Coast trips have not been kind to the Bulls in recent years.
That's unbelievable. I guess let's start with the positive, and then we can kind of work our way back if we want to. Let's start with the Kings game last night. I'll be honest with you, it doesn't do a whole lot for me, just considering that Bagley and Fox were both out. The Bulls held a 19-point lead at one point in this game, and they let the Kings crawl back within two with 3.5 minutes left to play. That doesn't scream volumes to me. At least LaVine and Markkanen, for the first time this season, both scored 20. What did you take away from this one?
Yeah, I didn't get a whole lot of comfort in this win either. I didn't gain any confidence in this team from this win. Yes, you know, they always say you got to beat the bad teams before you can beat the good teams. And this was at least the Bulls beating a bad team across the board, although, you know, some were saying, hey, Sacramento's actually played pretty well coming into this game. And they had, you know, done a nice streak of putting some wins together leading up to this game. But as you said, no Bagley, no Fox. So, yeah, okay. So you're like, what, 500 against bad teams so far this season with this win? Good for you. The other thing to me is that, you know, the Bulls won this game in spite of themselves. Yes, they built a lead and they didn't cough it up for once, but they kind of tried to. Like, yeah, you had some timely buckets and some timely free throws from the guys who are supposed to be your closers, Lowry and Zach, down the stretch, and thank God for that. But you also had, once again, unforced turnovers, bad turnovers down the stretch. You had guys failing to box out and giving the Kings additional shots and additional chances to tie or take the lead late in this game. It was like all of the other things that we've seen the Bulls do to cough up winnable games, they were doing them. The Kings just didn't take advantage of it.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, is that they just didn't take advantage of it. I mean, every other team the Bulls have played so far has pretty much done that. I think this is really the first Bulls win that we've pulled out where it's been tight at the end. I mean, you could say maybe the Grizzlies game was kind of tight at the end as well, but and I guess the Detroit game was too.
Well, or Zach's one-man show against Charlotte.
That's true. So really, I mean, it's just been a matter of the Bulls finding a way to blow it, and the defense looks terrible in these fourth quarters, and I don't know what's going on. The fact that they feel pressure after a team knocks down maybe two or three straight shots, and then all of a sudden they go into panic mode. I don't know if that's a cause on offense making the defense terrible or what they're doing, but it seems like progressively throughout the game, the Bulls get worse and worse defense, and third and fourth quarters have been terrible too. So again, this Kings win doesn't do a whole lot for me, and I tweeted out on the 30th of October, Matt, I tweeted out the next 15 games and said, where would we be December 1st, 20 games into the season? And I asked fans for what they thought about the record the Bulls would have. I picked the Bulls to be 6-14, and that's exactly what they were. This is disappointing, though. I don't know what answers Jim Boylen has, but it's the same spiel whether the Bulls win or lose. It's the same thing from Jim Boylen every single night, unless he's throwing movie references out there.
If you build it, they will come, Joel. Seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe?
Oh, my God. Field of Dreams. What? Yeah, and look, that was another element to last night's game, and I'm guessing you noticed it too. Stefan Noh tweeted out the video. I think Marcus D also had the video on Twitter. There was a timeout in that game when, you know, Jim Boylen, who always insists on greeting his guys, you know, on the court aggressively. Jason Goff was talking about it last night during the Kings game. It pisses him off. He's like, dude, let your guys walk to the bench before you just attack them with your coaching that's terrible and doesn't help. But there was a shot of LaVine, Kobe, Wendell, and Lowry all gathered around, and Jim Boylen is, it looks like, you know, talking to them, trying to hype them up, giving them instructions, and they're all just ignoring him. They are legit ignoring him. So to me, that's still an issue. Like, yeah, good for you. You rallied together. You got a win. You didn't go winless on your road trip. And, you know, Zach LaVine had a nice Instagram post that was him and his guys together, you know, in a huddle saying, you know, together, solid W. But I'm pretty sure that this team and its collection of players, save maybe, you know, Archie and Shaq, are still not at all sold on Jim Boylen, and that there is still plenty of friction there, especially between Jim Boylen and his best player. So, no, a win against Sacramento does not cure that at all.
Yeah, and it wasn't just this game either. I mean, you can look for video evidence of the Bulls, like, clearly just dismissing Jim Boylen. The Charlotte shot with Zach LaVine, where Jim Boylan's running on the court trying to celebrate with everybody else, and nobody's really celebrating with him. And I feel like it even goes beyond that. Think about Zach LaVine's comments after tonight's game. He said that they started to play a two-man game, him and Lowry Markkanen, which he felt like they had gotten away from, which was successful last season. So I don't know if that is just a strategy overall for Jim Boylen. He was trying to do something different, get these guys to play together, all five guys playing in one system, as opposed to just letting your two best players on the floor do exactly what they're supposed to do, play with each other and score the points. So I don't know. It seemed like it worked for Lowry Markkanen. I don't know if that's just a confidence thing because he knocked down a first couple of his threes early on in the game, but it seems like they're doing exactly the opposite from what Jim Boylen is talking about and saying, like, we're together, we know the system, we're doing this all together, we're growing, and it's a process. And Zach LaVine and Lowry Markkanen are like, we're going away from things, and we're bringing those back, and they're actually having success. So hopefully Zach and Lowry continue to play that two-man game, and we see some success there.
Well, yeah, and we saw that be successful at, you know, during stretches of last season when they were both playing well. And they both played well off of each other, and we just really haven't seen any of that this season when Jim Boylen has been trying to use this free-flowing offense that several times, including in, you know, crunch moments down the stretch, as the Bulls have coughed up all these winnable games, just stops working. The wheels fall off, the ball stops moving, people stop moving off the ball, and Lowry, who, you know, by plenty of examples so far, has appeared to be a very passive player on the court, gets completely lost in that offense. And that doesn't work. And that's a big reason for why he has regressed. So if Zach and Lowry wanted to just say, you know what, fuck it, let's just play some two-man game, they should do that. Because, and look, it's not anything, you know, overwhelmingly awesome. But this was the first time all season we saw Zach and Lowry each score 20-plus. Lowry didn't even have a great game. He was 6 of 12 for 20 points. That's not great. based on our expectations for Lowry this season, that is pedestrian at best. So, no. You know, we shouldn't be jumping for joy because of that performance from Markkanen and Levine. Hopefully, we'll see more of it. But again, you know, Jim Boylan after the game saying, like, this is what we envisioned. We've, you know, we finally got a game where it worked the way we saw it working, where Zach and Lowry are leading the way. Wendell has a double-double. Satoransky, who has become more aggressive in this recent stretch of games, you know, finds his looks and finds good looks for his teammates, chipping in 14-5. And, you know, if you plug a healthy Otto into that, maybe it looks even better. But it took that to beat a bad Kings team, missing two of its key pieces, and its other key piece, Buddy Hield, had a terrible night shooting. And you squeaked out a win. So if that's the blueprint for this team winning games, and it barely worked against that Kings team, missing all those pieces and having a terrible night from the floor, that's not a good sign.
You get a little bit of a break, I guess, coming up, but it's not even really a break. It took Kobe White going off to beat the Grizzlies, and then you have the Warriors coming up too, which you got embarrassed on the road against the Warriors, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the schedule doesn't get any easier for this Bulls team. So, like you said, if this is the way they're going to try to scrap out wins, I'm not very confident December is going to look any brighter than November did. It just, to me, I don't understand what this team is trying to do here. And the wing depth, too, I think is a huge play to this. And I'll be curious what happens with Otto Porter this week, because I think Darnell Mayberry had just reported that this marks the 2-week stretch of where Porter was supposed to be reevaluated. But I don't even think he's going to come back. If tests clear, they say he can come back and play. But from what it sounds like, he still doesn't put a whole lot of weight on his shot, and so he might still be a couple weeks away. I think that's killing them, though, that they don't have any wing presence at all. They don't have another shooter out there, and maybe that's why Thomas Satoransky is all of a sudden starting to be a little bit more aggressive. He realizes if Zach's shot's not falling down, nobody's willing to score, so maybe he has to be the guy at least until Otto comes back and we see what he can do. But I mean, Zach and Lowry, if they can't do this consistently, this Bulls team isn't going to win many games.
Yeah. Obviously the wing depth and Otto's absence has been hurting this team. And like you said, you know, the latest update we got is that, yeah, he's getting some shots up at practice in the corner, but he's not even jumping on his jump shots. He is flat foot just throwing balls at the hoop right now. So that doesn't necessarily sound like a great update. We'll see what the official update is. As you said, you know, this was the 2-week mark where he was supposed to be reevaluated. But we've seen Jim Boylan try a few different things. Obviously, throughout most of the season, even when Otto was in there, he loves using this 3-guard lineup off the bench that featured, you know, Dunn, Kobe White, and Archie. And, you know, we've seen less of that recently. Archie only played 12 minutes Monday night, as opposed to, like, his normal 25. And Satoransky, who, you know, you and I have both mentioned has been playing a little bit better recently, played 34. Which maybe, guess what? Your starting guard should play 34 minutes instead of, like, Satoransky through the first dozen or so games of the season was playing like 22, 23. And you're sitting there saying, all right, why are he and Archie playing the same number of minutes? That doesn't make any fucking sense. So I'm curious, as we've seen some of these, you know, rotation changes over the last 2 or 3 games, including Shaq Harrison going from starting in place of Hutch in place of Otto to being a DNP, and also Gafford taking his role back from Cornette, who came back healthy after the sinus thing, and Denzel Valentine getting into this rotation after being in Jim's doghouse for the first 3 quarters of the season. Like, I'm wondering if Jim Boylan got instructions from his bosses to be like, yo, dude, you got to change some of these rotations. Because Jim Boylan, if we know one thing about him, he's very stubborn. And he has been insisting, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to keep doing what we're doing because I believe it's going to work. But all of a sudden, we're starting to see some changes. And some of his, you know, teacher's pet favorites are losing minutes or not getting it.
It'll be interesting to see over now the next 20 games whether or not Ryan Arcidiacono is still playing on average 5 or 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, which is bizarre in itself, too. And I don't know. What does that say about this Bulls team that if Arcidiacono is your most trusted or one of your most trusted players in this team, and you feel the need that you need to have him out on the floor, especially in tight games, which the Bulls have been in. The majority of the games the Bulls have played in have been pretty close games going into the fourth quarter. What does that say about the overall makeup of this team then? Like, shouldn't Zach LaVine be your most trusted player on this team if, as far as head coach and star player goes, or number one player on this team? Or at the very least, be Lauri Markkanen or maybe Wendell Carter Jr. Just to me, Ryan Arcidiacono is supposed to be like your 12th or 13th guy off the bench. And yet he all of a sudden has squeezed himself into crunch time minutes through this first 25% of this season. So I don't know. Maybe that says more about this Bulls team and what the hell Jim Boylan's doing than we think.
Yeah, and I mean, at least last night you saw him close not with Archie, although he did once again play some fourth quarter minutes, and like there, you know, there were a couple possessions where you were like, wait, why did we just give the ball to Archie with like a shot clock at six and counting, or why are we letting Archie try and go one on one here? Because it didn't work for the most part. Archie had a rough night on Monday. He had 4 points and 3 turnovers, and only 1 assist. So, I mean, Jim was trying to max out the, you know, efficiency of Archie and, you know, giving all these reasons for playing him, and it's all about the hustle, right? Oh, he's diving on the floor for loose balls and he's taking charges and all that. Okay, yeah, great. But at the, you know, at a certain point, you have to actually value other basketball-related things, like, oh, I don't know, scoring? And then, you know, the other interesting, you know, thing, as you know, we're talking about the backcourt rotation and how it's changed a little bit. He closed with Chris Dunn out there on Monday night. And I didn't love it because we've seen Dunn's issues on the offensive end. And hey, guess what? There was a late fourth quarter possession where Chris Dunn, top of the key, wide open. And he's wide open for a reason. He bricked one of 3 bricks from downtown as he continues to shoot like 17% from behind the 3-point line this season. And he also is not, I don't think, a very, you know, a very smart player as a distributor. He did have 4 assists, but he, you know, in those late game moments, I don't know. Would you rather have Zach and Lowry play a 2-man game, or would you rather have Chris Dunn running the offense? And he was also like committing bad fouls on the defensive end, and that's supposed to be Chris Dunn's calling card. So, you know, Jim is trying to make up for this absence at the wing depth by shuffling these guards around and figuring out his best closing lineup. But I guess the one positive takeaway is that Zach and Lowry were both on the floor for like the final, you know, 6 minutes and change of the fourth quarter, instead of the bench being on the floor for the final stretch of the game. And they each made plays that helped them close the game.
It's just ridiculous that has to be the bar and level of happiness we have to have in a fourth quarter win, is the fact that Zach and Lowry are both on the floor at the same time in the fourth quarter, which for the most part this season has been kind of staggered. To me, I don't know what that said. I mean, I guess I understand why Chris Dunn was out there. They wanted a couple defensive stops at the end. Feel like this team can't get any defensive stops in the fourth quarter, but I get what you're saying. Like, he can't even get a shot up. So it's basically playing 5-on-4 when you're on the offensive side of the ball when he's out there. But at least he'll take care of the ball for you. At least he showed it in this game. He only had 1 turnover, and I don't even think it was in the fourth quarter. But he'll take care of the ball for you, play some good defense, although he did give up some fouls. So maybe that was Jim Boylan's thinking at the end there, and he didn't want to piss away this Kings win because the Bulls come out on the other side of this. Buddy Hield knocks down a couple threes late instead of missing those. I mean, we're talking about 3 straight losses here. So this Kings win doesn't do anything. Again, it goes back to the first point that we made. This Kings win doesn't do a whole lot for me. And I don't know, the Bulls get a break playing the Grizzlies and the Warriors coming up, but that doesn't do a whole lot for me either.
No. And, you know, just a slight correction. You did highlight that Dunn only had 1 turnover Monday night, but that's what the box score says. I'm counting it as 4 turnovers. Until Chris Dunn shows us anything different, him taking a 3-point shot is the same thing as a turnover. I swear to God. Yeah. Like, you might as well count them as turnovers. There's a reason. You know, Jim, we have to listen to Jim Boyle and say, you know, oh, you know, I want Chris to keep taking those open shots. There's a reason he's wide fucking open. All right? It's because the dude's shooting 17%. Chris Dunn taking threes is the same thing as a turnover.
Yeah, that's got to stop. I mean, on the season now, he's shooting 16.3% from the three. Like, at some point, dude, you just got to understand this isn't working. And especially taking threes, and you're wide open, too. Like, it doesn't work. Go to the rim. I don't know, start playing your mid-range game again. At least one of the guys on this team will start shooting some mid-ranges. Maybe that'll be you. But that was the same problem last year. It's like his mid-range game sucked. It wasn't what it was in the first year. And getting to the rim and trying to draw fouls was another problem he was having. He was inconsistent night in and night out. So I don't know what that makes Chris Dunn as an offensive player. It basically makes him nothing unless all of a sudden he turns it around and starts knocking down these mid-ranges like he did in the first year here. But it hurts. It hurts when you stick a guy out there to do one thing and it basically makes you play 5-on-4 for the rest of the game if you have him out there on trying to run the offense. So, well, I don't know. It's better than, I guess, Ryan Arcidiacono being out there, although he can hit a shot. But the defense is terrible on that side when he's out there, especially late. So it goes back to this overall question, Matt. What are we doing with the rest of this season? How do we evaluate at what point do we stop playing the cycle of, oh, the Bulls lose two or three games and then maybe this is the turnaround with one win here. You know, I feel like we've been in this cycle now for 21 games going forward. So what happens now? What happens throughout the next 10 games or so?
Well, you know, if you want to believe the Bulls and the most recent words from Sam Smith, who, prefacing what I'm about to say, Sam Smith is one of the most respected, if not the most respected person covering this team for like the last half a century. But I don't know if you saw his latest piece about how, and like the Bulls official Twitter account prefaced his column with here we are, quarter way into the season. The Bulls are probably in the mix with four or five teams for the final playoff spot in the East. And you're sitting there thinking, like, are you kidding me? Like, what? Could you be more tone deaf? What, you know, we know the Bulls. They're only allowed to say positive things on their social media account. They're not allowed to, you know, ever jokingly make fun of themselves. Which is why, you know, their posts and then everybody's replies are always good for a laugh. Because the fan base is either saying, you like, F off, you're dead to me, or you are a joke. With all these posts, but clearly the Bulls, at least internally, are still not giving up on the idea of being a playoff team this season. And yes, at 7-14, winning only a third of your games in a very easy schedule, they are still, this early in the season, not out of it. So, I guess to them, they still think they can turn this around. Chris Dunn said earlier on this road trip, you know, we got to start putting things together, but it's not too late. We have three quarters of a season to go. Zach LaVine, after last night's win over Sacramento, said, you know, echoed those similar sentiments, saying, like, hey, you know, we got to turn this around quickly, but we can still turn this around. So they're not giving up. As far as what the fan base should expect, you know, I have plenty of fans, you know, tweeting at me and whatever, and in our inbox already talking about tanking. This 2020 draft class is pretty weak. Compared to the last few years, I don't want to be thinking about tanking already, like just for my mental health. That's just such a depressing thought. But I, at the same time, have very little faith that this team, if they don't change anything significant, are going to suddenly turn this around.
To close out 2019, the Bulls are going to play 8 of 13 games at home. So I guess it's up to a home stretch here. I mean, this is when the Bulls get hot, right? Like, this is the December win streak that all of a sudden happens. It's happened 2 years in a row now. So is that all of a sudden what we're going to find here? Remember last year when they beat San Antonio and they beat the Thunder and all of a sudden Jim Boylan had him, I don't know what it was, like 5-2 in his first 7 games. And then the destruction happened and everybody remembers that. But, and then even the year before that, the rebuild with the Nico Mirotic win streak and going like 14-7 over 21 games. So I don't know if that's all of a sudden what they're banking on, that they can turn this around with the extended home stretch that they do have, which is coming up actually. You know, they just go to Miami for the one game, but they play like their next 5 of their next 6 at home. So I guess if there's a turnaround coming, it needs to happen now. during this home stretch, because the Bulls have been especially bad at home. Like the other night, if they lose to the Warriors at home, nobody should go to another Bulls game for the rest of the season. Like that's where I'm at this point. And you can see the building starting to empty quicker and quicker throughout these games. And the building's not even packed either for some of these games. So I think things are starting to turn around. They need to start playing better at home. And I think hopefully maybe this is where it starts, but I don't know. You still don't have Otto. You still don't have Chandler Hutchison. You're still running that same lineup out there, and we're banking on a bunch of hope that Zach and Lowry can finally figure this out a quarter way through the season. And you still have Jim Boylan as your head coach.
Oh, God, don't remind me. Yeah, and the numbers back up what you were just talking about with this team's, you know, home games, obviously not playing well, not winning a lot of winnable games at home. You know, the tougher parts of their schedule have also been, you know, home games. Toronto, Houston, you know, already have hosted Milwaukee once, hosted the Lakers. That should have been a win against a good team, but they coughed it up. So that's been the tougher part of their schedule compared to their road schedule. But even still, it's your home floor, and the Bulls have not protected it well. And as far as the attendance, the numbers are dropping. The Bulls are, you know, they've always been first or second in attendance, even through these rebuilding years and, you know, the back end of the Jimmy Butler years, of course, and of course they were number one in the Derrick Rose years. And now they fall into like fifth or sixth the last time I checked in attendance, which, you know, again, to clarify, attendance is counted by ticket sales. But then the different stat of percent of capacity filled is different than attendance. And that has dropped even more dramatically for the Bulls. Percentage of capacity filled, the last time I checked, after their last home game, was 20th in the NBA.
Yeah, they're down to 21st. They're down to 21st now.
Unheard of. For this organization and this 21st, for this organization, that is embarrassing. And it might finally be the wake-up call that Dipshit 1 and Dipshit 2, a.k.a. father and son, need to do something about this organization and clean house.
The Bulls' attendance right now on average is 19,507. That's a capacity of 93.3%. Like I said, 21st in the NBA. But if you're going just by average crowd, the Bulls are 6th. In the Heat, Raptors, Mavericks, Trailblazers, and 76ers are ahead of them. So I would go look at more of capacity. How many? How much are they actually filling the United Center? And this was kind of a bucking trend at the end of last season. Obviously, people started to go to the games when they got hot in February. But even at the back end of the rebuild year one, we saw declining attendance and declining attendance of people stopped going to games. I don't know if that's going to have an impact on anything either. If the Bulls continue to lose games here, especially against bad teams that are coming up and coming to the United Center, if you get embarrassed by one of these teams like the Grizzlies or the Warriors or the Hornets or even the Hawks, if you get embarrassed by any of these teams at home, like what incentive are you giving fans to show up to a game, to spend $500-$600 on one night to see these guys just get blown out? Like, at a certain point, nobody wants to do that. So you're asking a lot of Bulls fans to show up on nights and spend that kind of money and getting blown out by the worst team in the league or, you know, a bottom five team in the league. So we'll see. We'll see if they turn this around here at home. But I don't know. I don't know at this point, because it seems like the players to me, Matt, and this is what we'll wrap up on. It seems like the players to me have pretty much, like, maybe they're hanging on by a thread, but it seems like there is some type of disconnection. I know Jim Boylan said he doesn't feel like the team is disconnected at all after the Warriors loss, but I completely disagree. It just seems like the players have totally lost them and they're going to start to do their own thing and see if they can win it their way. It doesn't seem like it was back in February, back in March, towards the end of the season last year when we thought things were kind of coming together for the players and for Boylan. And now it just, despite what Boylan wants to think or says, it seems like it's pretty much a wrap as far as disconnection with the players.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I thought it was a wrap when they almost mutinied against Boston, or after, you know, after the Boston loss. they can talk all they want about how those relationships were, you know, repaired and rebuilt, and oh, Boylan was a traveling man all offseason, going around and, you know, forming these stronger bonds with his players, going to Finland to hang out with Lowry, going to the West Coast to see Zach. Oh, and Zach offered to pay Boylan's fine last season, and everything's hunky-dory. I didn't buy a second of that. Not at all. You see the way that this coach conducts himself. You see the way that this coach treats his players, professionals, NBA players, like they're high school kids, and then throws them under the bus when they lose. And he should be shouldering a significant portion, if not majority, of blame for the ways in which they have found different ways to lose so far this season. No, he's going to throw his players under the bus while treating them like children. How in the world would you believe that his relationship with these players, other than face value, is actually a strong bond? And I'm not denying the truth that Jim Boylan is a man and a coach who truly cares about his players. As for their success in their careers on the court and as individuals, I do believe that Jim Boylan is that type of person who really does care about these guys. But that can be true, while it can also be true that he is going about things the completely wrong way. And he is not an NBA coach. And his methods are not getting positive responses. So that is all the scenario. I don't believe for a second that this team has bought into or rebought into anything Boylan is doing. I think every single person on that roster is sick of Jim Boylan and wants him gone. But that won't happen. Not this season, anyway. You know, people were saying, oh, man, if they go winless on this road trip, and then, you know, they lose to Sacramento, like, you know, it's got to be it. Today is the one-year anniversary of them firing Fred and replacing him with Jim. People thought maybe, you know, the Bulls love to fire people around the holidays. Maybe we'll get a Jim Boylan firing. I don't see it, because guess what? The only way that Jim Boylan is fired is if Jim Boylan is fired and it is paired with John Paxson resigning. Because you can't fire Jim Boylan and also not admit that you fucked up. And this is the last fuck up that you get, because it's an embarrassingly bad one. And guess what? Jerry and Michael aren't ready to let John Paxson resign, even if John Paxson wanted to. They're going to see this season through with Jim Boylan.
I think the only thing that saves Boylan really at this point is if all of a sudden Lowry Markkanen turns it on, or Zach LaVine turns it on for the next 6 weeks. Like, to me, that's the only thing that really has any saving grace for Jim Boylan as far as the way the fans feel about him, the way the management sees him. But that only prolongs the inevitable. It's like, do we know that Jim Boylan is a good head coach? Still don't know, because he's carried by either Lowry Markkanen or maybe Wendell Carter Jr. But really, Lowry Markkanen or Zach LaVine are the two guys that really can save Jim Boylan, at least save some face for Jim Boylan at this point. But I'm with you. And the whole idea of maybe Gar Forman being the guy that's going to be scapegoated here, my biggest question with that, Matt, is the damage is already done at this point. Like, if you think he did a bad job of evaluating talent and bringing talent to this roster over these 3 years, just this rebuild, if we're just talking here, the damage is already done. So the point of firing him and then just keeping Boylan and Paxson on would make absolutely no sense to me. I mean, it would give satisfaction and some gratification to some Bulls fans that have been calling for him to be fired for the last half decade. But still, to me, the damage is already done there. And he's already pretty much just a scout. I mean, at this point, right, he's the most advanced scout that the Bulls have at this point, with a GM tag. So, like you said, if there's going to be...
And also a guy who negotiates contracts.
Right. So if there's going to be change, it's got... Like, I want to see the impact on the floor. Like, that's where I'm going to see immediate impact. As opposed to, like, if Gar Forman's out and Jim Boylan and John Paxson are still here, I don't know what that we're still spinning the same wheels here. There's still two.
It changes.
Yeah,
nothing.
There's still two pieces of the three pieces that should be completely cleared. But I don't know.
And, you know, if they fire Gar, you know who's taking his job? Doug Collins.
I was just going to say that.
Doug Collins is trying to take Gar's job. And, you know, he's been in, he was brought back on board, back in the fold, you know, a year or 2 years ago with the, you know, the special advisor, senior advisor tag or whatever. And based on all of the different, you know, whispers we're hearing and trying to put the pieces of this puzzle together, if they need to axe somebody to appease a bloodthirsty fan base that's sick of losing and sick of their incompetence, but Jerry and Michael aren't ready to fire John and John's not ready to resign, then Gar is the figurehead whose head will roll, and they'll put Doug in that spot, and it's more of the same. It is the Bulls being the Bulls and only hiring Bulls people in their circle of trust that is a dumber, more pointless circle of trust than Robert De Niro's and Meet the Parents. It's dumb. It's the same shit. Year after year, decade after decade, it's how they operate. And you already fired Gar's guy. You already fired Fred. So firing Gar does nothing, as you said, to change the fact that you still have John Paxson, you still have Jim Boylan, and you still have the guy who's running things right now, Michael Reinsdorf. Jerry's checked out. Jerry's at the winter meetings for baseball right now, who is the biggest Jim Boylan fan in the organization because he's not too bright. So firing Gar doesn't fix any of that.
I guess we'll find out over the next 15 games or so really where this season's at. And what's the over under that you're putting on is Paxson speaking anytime soon? Would you put the next couple of weeks before the year ends?
Well,
or you think he waits until there's a streak of wins?
Traditionally, he does his radio interview Christmas morning, right? While everyone is enjoying their time with their families, or opening up presents, and having Christmas breakfast, and When the least amount of people are there to be an audience is when this Bulls organization's bosses go face the fire. It's like, remember a couple years ago when they held their season-ending press conference like after a late-night game, Game 82, to conclude the season, when there was also some other big sporting event going on and nobody was paying attention? This team and the people running the organization, for the most part, they hide. They hide because they know they are heavily scrutinized by basically the entire fan base, and the only people who believe in them are themselves. And they don't like being, as John Paxson would put it, interrogated. You're a person holding a position of high power in one of the richest organizations, not just in the NBA, but in all of sports. And you have to face the fire when your decisions lead to poor results. And they don't like that. So they don't do it very often.
So the next time we're going to hear from him is when they decide that they're going to move on from Gar Forman, right? That's when they're going to field all the questions about everything that's happened and the colossal failure of this year three of this rebuild, and we're going to say injuries were part of the problem, and these guys are still trying to figure things out, and we're going in a new direction with a different GM and all of this stuff. That's when we're going to hear from him, right? Or because I'm confused. I don't know when we're going to hear from him again, because last year it was right around this time when Fred Hoiberg was axed, and he went down to Mexico City with the team and was speaking like after almost every game, and now it's been radio silence. But I don't know what he's going to prepare himself to answer when he's asked about all of this. Even if the Bulls pick up, I don't care, 3 of the next 4 wins, and he speaks over the next 2 weeks, and that's something he can pat himself a little bit on. But still, dude, you told us September 30th of 2019 that this team was in the hunt and should have the expectations as a playoff team. This team's one of the worst teams in the East, and one of the most disappointing teams in the NBA as a whole. So I don't know what answers he's going to have for anybody when he does decide to speak.
Which, honestly, and look, I said earlier, I'm not ready emotionally and mentally to just be all aboard the tank right now.
No, me either.
Because I wanted better things for this season than that. But even thinking that they were going to come short of a playoff spot, I wanted them to at least be better than this. So at the same time, the evil, sadistic, cynical asshole part of me, which we all know is a part of me that exists, wanted them to just be losing and losing and losing and losing until it comes time for John Paxson to speak. Because if they string some wins together against these crap opponents that they got on deck, hey, look, we got a three-game winning streak because we beat Sacramento, Memphis, and Golden State. Then John Paxson can go out when he does his holiday interview and say, look, see, things are starting to turn around, when we all know that he hired a guy who's in over his head, who's not a good coach, who doesn't have a good relationship and a good rapport with his players. And most of this is John Paxson's fault. But if they string together a few wins against shitty teams, he can go out when he does that interview and say, see, you just had to be patient. Things are working. Well, we all know things.
God damn. Now I have to go back and retweet from our Locked On Bulls Twitter account when I said we're going to be talking about and going through clips in depth of the next lottery pick we're going to have in 2020. Unbelievable.
Start looking for it, man. Start looking for those draft picks.
Just to wrap up really quick, on a positive note at least, we got tagged in this on Twitter, and it's from NBA.com stats. Screen assist totals through week 6 of the NBA. Wendell Carter Jr., number 4 in the NBA with 90 total screen assists. LaMarcus Aldridge, 91 at third. Domantas Sabonis, the Pacers, 127 second. And Rudy Gobert with 142. The Utah Jazz leads the league right now. So that's at least a positive. But we expect that from Carter.
But he's also got to cut down on the bad illegal screens, because he's been called for a handful of those. He got called for, I think, 2 more on Monday night.
So, I mean, there's a positive, I guess, for you. Grizzlies and Warriors later this week. So at least I can't even say that we're banking on a win there. We thought before we went to Thanksgiving break, we thought the Warriors game was in the bag, in Golden State.
I didn't think that. I don't know who thought that. I did not think that.
Against the worst effing team in the NBA, no doubt. Unbelievable. But
there's no such thing for this Bulls team right now as in the bag.
I guess
no
not. Such thing. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks so much for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. You want to react to any of this? In the next, month or so, how do you think the Bulls things are going to change? And does this Kings win do anything for you? Or looking ahead to the schedule over the next couple of weeks, does picking up wins against below average teams do anything for you? Hit us up, 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
What makes you think the wins will come?
If you build it, they will come, Joel. Seen that movie?
I've seen it.
He's in the movie, Joe?
Okay. I've seen it. But, I mean, at the same time, they haven't come yet.
Okay.
You guys are trying to build this.
I'm not gonna dispute you on that. You're right. I'm going to look at what we can grow, how what I can teach better, what we need to learn, what we do well and do it better, what we don't do well, fix it and do it better. That's what I'm going to do. And I've got enough experience, I think, where I've seen when you do that, good things come. And that's what I'm going to do.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com